नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय यद् यद् आचरति श्रेष्ठास् तथैवेतरो जनः स यत् प्रमाणं कुरुते लोकस्तदनुवर्तते यद् यद् आचरति
श्रेष्ठा
तथैवेतरो जनः स यत् प्रमाणं कुरुते लोकस्तदनुवर्तते यत् यत् Whatever.
Acharati.
He does.
Shrishtaha.
A respectable leader.
That. And that alone.
Eva.
Certainly.
Itaraha.
Common.
Janaha,
person.
Saha,
he.
Yat,
whichever.
Pramanam.
Example.
Kurute.
Does perform.
Lokaha.
All the world.
Tat. That. Anuvartate
follows in the footsteps.
Translation and purport by His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada. Whatever action a great man performs, common men follow, and whatever standards he sets by exemplary acts, all the world pursues. Purport. People in general always require a leader who can teach the public by practical behavior. A leader cannot teach the public to stop smoking if he himself smokes. Lord Chaitanya said that a teacher should behave properly before he begins teaching. One who teaches in that way is called acharya, or the ideal teacher. Therefore, a teacher must follow the principles of Shastra, scripture, to teach the common man. The teacher cannot manufacture rules against the principles of revealed scriptures. The revealed scriptures like Manu Samhita and similar others are considered the standard books to be followed by human society. Thus, the leader's teaching should be based on the principles of such standard Shastras. One who desires to improve himself must follow the standard rules as they are practiced by the great teachers. The Srimad Bhagavatam also affirms that one should follow in the footsteps of great devotees. And that is the way of progress on the path of spiritual realization. The king, or executive head of a state, the father, and the school teacher are all considered to be natural leaders of the innocent people in general. All such natural leaders have a great responsibility to their dependents. Therefore, they must be conversant with standard books of moral and spiritual codes. Krishna is discussing why a person who is not obliged to follow the ordinary rules of ethics, the ordinary rules of the Varnashram system, because his position is spiritual. He's no longer a Brahmin, a householder, a sannyasi. Naham vipro nacha narat patir. Lord Chaitanya stated his understanding. I am not a Brahmin. I am not a sannyasi. I'm not a king. I'm not a brahmachari. What am I? Gopi Bhartur Parakamala Yor Dasa Dasa Anudasaha. I am simply servant of the servant of the servant of the master of the gopis, Krishna. So one who has that identification is no longer to be identified according to his body. In fact, it is serious error to judge a Vaishnav by his bodily identification. Vaishnave jati buddhi, and so on, yasya va naraki saha. It is one symptom of a hellish mentality, or the mentality of someone who's already living in hell, to think of a Vaishnav according to his bodily designation. To think this is a Malecha Vaishnav, or this is a Indian or a Russian Vaishnava, to identify them according to their bodies and therefore have a prejudicial idea. Of course, we recognize that we're in different bodies, but you should not consider it any detriment to be in a particular kind of body for a Vaishnava. He is transcendental to all material designations. Any Vaishnava, even a neophyte, has to be understood as a spiritual person. Why does such a spiritual person have to do the great ordinary work, since he's not obliged to these material obligations anymore? He's not subject to the material obligations. One reason given here is to set an example, loka sangraham, to show others who don't have such transcendental faith how a decent person behaves. Because whatever the best man does, other people tend to follow. That principle does hold true even in the modern age. But the problem is, we don't have ideal men to follow. The leaders of society are not noble. At best, they're businessmen, or just common workers, shudras. And these are the leaders of society. Capitalistic society, the Vaishyas control. And in communistic or socialistic society, the Shudras control. And where are the Kshatriyas and the Brahmanas? There aren't any. So, yes, the best men are leading and setting the example. And you see them on the front and back pages of the newspapers. The politicians in the front, the sportsmen in the back. These are our best people, unfortunately. And that's all that people have to follow. So they'll see the same pictures of the same ugly politicians day after day on the front pages of the newspaper, engaged in various different squabbles with one another each day. This is the best man setting the example. But when the best man is a lousy man, then it's a lousy example. The best example is the example set by Krishna himself. So he's going to discuss that in the next verses. How a Vaishnava should be exemplary because God himself chooses to be exemplary. He chooses, in general, with some exceptions, to behave the way someone in his position should behave. Krishna accepts different positions. Sometimes he's born as a Brahmana, sometimes as a Kshatriya, more often as a Kshatriya. Sometimes in different animal species he takes his birth. But in each case, he acts according to his situation appropriately, to set an example. He sets, as Lord Varaha, he sets the example how a noble boar should behave. Boar's nature is to root through the mud, smelling out something to eat. They like to do that. So Lord Boar, he's stuck his snout into the Garbha ocean, looking for the earth, like a good boar. He set the proper example, how a pig should act. And in all his births, he's showing how to be the best anything. Krishna is always the ideal of perfection. He's always the perfect example. We have to not imitate Krishna to try to be perfect, but we should be as much ideal as we can in whatever our duty is. Especially, religious principles should be upheld, dharma. Each person, according to his position in the varnas and the ashrams, has a certain kind of dharma that he's expected to maintain. Even the shudras have their duties. The duty of a shudra, he may not be very well controlling his senses and his mind and his speech, but he should be loyal to his employer. This is the good quality of a shudra. There's only one samskara, or purificatory ritual, for the shudras. That is vivaha samskara, marriage. So a good shudra should be faithful to his or her spouse. If not, then they're not even good shudras. If they're disloyal to their employers and to their spouses. These are the virtues of a shudra. And what to speak of Brahmana? He has so many virtues he's expected to exhibit. When King Parikshit chastised Kali, who was trying to destroy the last leg of religion, truthfulness, he was in the disguise of a king, but he was actually a shudra. And he was beating the leg of dharma, the last leg, trying to break it. Parikshit arrested him and was about to kill him on the spot. But he surrendered at Parikshit's feet and begged for mercy, and then Parikshit felt obliged to give that shelter. And he did. And he told him, you can stay in five places. What is it? Sunapanam tata, the place where there's slaughterhouse, where there's drinking of liquor, where there's illicit connection with women, where there's gambling. Dyutam.
Yes,
gold. Gold is the fifth. When Kali said that's okay, but there's not much of these things going on in your kingdom. Wherever I go, I'll see you with your sword upraised, ready to kill me again. Give me one more place. So Parikshit agreed. Okay, wherever the gold is being kept, there you'll have your influence. And nowadays, walk down the street. You know, even if you're in a pious town where there's not much, like, unlike Udupi, where I live, you can't sell eggs on the street, what to speak of meat. It's against the law in Govardhan. People will chase you out of town if you try to sell eggs. One man came selling something with onions, one man came with eggs last year, and they chased him away. People, the neighbors, just chased him right off the street. They wouldn't let him set up a cart selling eggs in Govardhan. And meat eating is unheard of there. Unfortunately, this town only around, you know, the cart street. Beyond that, it's all non-veg. Unfortunately. But in some places they're pious, but still, every other store is a goldsmith, you know, a jeweler. So Kali has his ways to get in. Therefore, bubushu, someone who wants his own good fortune and the good fortune of others, etani na sevita, should not indulge in any of these five. Meat-eating intoxication, illicit sex, gambling, or hoarding of gold. If he wants to stay pure himself and to set a good example for society, he has to avoid these five. Visheshato dharmashiro guru narapati Ripo Narapati Guruhu. Especially someone who's supposed to have a reputation as a religious man and a leader of society, as a guru, as a teacher, as a king, or just as an exemplar of society, of the community. He must avoid these sinful activities. Otherwise, he's setting a bad example, and he will be degraded. He is degraded. What is Krishna getting at here? What is the essence of karma yoga? Is it just following a few regulative principles? Later on, he says, Mayi sarvani karmani sanyasi adhyatma chetasa nirashya niramomo vudva yujasva vigata dvaraha. Krishna's conception of karma yoga, yes, is to act without attachment. Adhyatma chetasa, with your mind aimed at the goal of spiritual achievement, not just aiming at some material success, but with your ultimate goal to be the self-realization. Without material ambitions, nirashir, nirmamo, without false proprietorship or unreasonable proprietorship. Not to try to acquire more than you need, and not to always identify yourself as the owner and controller of things. Even you have a family, but you don't consider that they are your property. They are Krishna's property, and your possessions, your real estate, and your money in the bank, and your influence in society. These are Krishna's potencies, and you are just the caretaker, and you are to use them in Krishna's service. That's nirmama, not considering anything to be your own. And then even though you have crores in the bank, you can be called a kinchana, someone who has nothing, because you don't consider it your own. Krishna will give you countless resources to use for his service if he chooses, but you should remain an unattached servant, just utilizing as the agent the possessions of his master for the service of the master. That's nirmala. So you just want vigata dvara. You should go ahead and do your fight. Engage in the struggle for existence, because you have your duty and you have to struggle to carry it out. But be free from feverishness. Do it with a cool head. But the most important element I skipped over, the first line, Mayi sarvani karmani sanyasya. You must dedicate all your activities to me. That is what Krishna considers the essence of karma yoga. Not just being a pious man, a vegetarian, a teetotaler. That's not sufficient. You must dedicate all your activities to Krishna. Then you're a karma yogi. Then you're practicing karma mishra bhakti. You're actually serving Krishna by giving Krishna the fruit of your works. It's not yet pure devotion, but it's the beginning of devotion. Arjuna doesn't need to be elevated to the level of karma yoga, because he's an eternal associate of Krishna. He is a pure devotee. So really, in Arjuna's case, he's only being taught this for our benefit. Krishna wants to establish a foundation. He doesn't want anybody to say that he hasn't explained everything. So he's explaining all the different ladders, or the different, rather, rungs on the ladder of what's called the yoga ladder. The progressive, gradual methods by which one can elevate oneself to Krishna consciousness. Krishna explains them all, and then he says, forget them all, at the end. Sarva dharmam parityaja. All these 18 systems of yoga that I've taught you, now forget them all, and I'll teach you just one that replaces all the rest. Sarva dharmam parityaja. Give up all your conceptions of religion, of your duty, whatever you think it is, forget it. Mamekam Sharanam Vraja. Just take shelter of me alone. And I'll protect you. You don't have to take any other shelter. Still, even pure devotees, they want to set a good example for others. Therefore, they behave like decent citizens. They don't break the law unnecessarily, whimsically, thinking that they can get away with murder. Devotees should not be like that. Arjun should fight, because what are other kshatriyas going to do? Either they'll laugh at you, which was one suggestion earlier, that the great warriors on this battlefield are going to think that you're a coward. Even if they don't, suppose they still respect you. Arjun, for some strange reason, has run off to the forest, but he's a great soul, so we won't question his motives. If they think like that, then they're going to follow your example, and they'll start wondering whether they can do the same thing and get away with it. And all the great kshatriyas who don't ridicule you, who respect you, are going to want to emulate you and also abandon their duty. Is that a good idea, Arjun? Who will protect society if the kshatriyas don't execute their duty? If the kshatriyas become non-violent, then the criminal class will take over. And the helpless citizens, the women, the brahmanas, the old men, the children, the animals, will be violated by the criminal class. So the kshatriya have to keep at their post, holding the rod of punishment, and ready to stop anybody who's irreligious. That is the business of government, to uphold religion and to stop irreligion before it makes any progress, not to allow it. A government that tolerates irreligion is an irresponsible government and should be kicked out for their own good, because otherwise they go to hell. A kshatriya, Manu says that a kshatriya gets 1/6 of all the good credit of his citizens. He can take 1/6 of their produce, of the profits of their work, for taxation. But he also gets 1/6 of their punya, their good karma, if he does his duty. If he neglects his duty of defending and using violence if necessary to defend his citizens and to defend his kingdom, if he becomes non-violent, then he gets 1/6 of all the sinful activity reactions of his citizens, which should be enough to drag him to hell several times over. Just by neglecting to uphold religion, to be a defender, and if necessary, to use violence. If he fails, if he neglects or refuses to do that, then he's going to go to hell, for sure. Even Krishna hints at this to Arjuna. Ata chetvam ahankaran na shroshyasi vinankshati. Arjuna, I've given you my instructions. Vimrishai tada sheshena yatechasi tatakuru. You think about everything I told you. This is in the end, in the 18th chapter. And you decide what you want to do. I won't force you. But, ata chetvam ahankaran, if out of false ego, you do the wrong, you make the wrong choice, and you decide not to fight, I can guarantee you're going to fall down. You're going, to degrade yourself. Your choice, but I just warn you, if you decline to do your duty, you're going to become degraded. So don't tell me that I didn't warn you. Krishna is telling explicitly to Arjuna that a kshatriya who doesn't defend, who doesn't use force as necessary, is neglectful, and he's actually accruing not only his own sin, but the sins of his citizens are on his head. So that's another reason why Arjuna should fight, as expressed in this verse. Okay, are there any questions?
Yes. How do you understand that gold, the meat eating, gambling, this we can understand to be grossly sinful?
Yes.
But gold, anyway, people have money. So, how is gold the Christian gold? How do you understand?
Well, it was an afterthought. Gold itself is not sinful, but Kali needed someplace secure. Yeah, it was just too hard to find a place where sinful activities were going on in Parikshit's domain. So, okay, Parikshit gave him the place where gold is kept. Because it the hoarding of gold. If the money stays in circulation, then it's not evil. It's when you sit on it. When you're a miser and you just keep the gold, then that Kali can take over. The gold is moving from one pocket to the other, you know, then Kali can't settle in. But when you keep it in your closet, then that's dangerous. It generates greed. You know, the more money we have, when you have a brahmana collects, he accepts charity, but he doesn't keep what he doesn't use. Whatever he can't use in the same day, ideally, he should give it away. He shouldn't store food for the next day. Ideally. Practically, grihasthas should store food because they're responsible for other people. And to help their neighbors and the community, they should keep a stock of food in case of emergencies. But an ideal Brahmin is one thing. Duty of a grihastha is one thing. The duty of a Brahmin is a different thing. The duty of an ideal Brahmin, a really renounced Brahmin, is not to keep even food for the next day. But to speak of money. Whatever he can't use immediately, he should give away to somebody else. And Prabhupada once explained that that's sort of the way ISKCON is managed. You know, the bankers ask, where do you keep all your money actually? You know, you only have a few lakhs in our bank. Where do you keep all, you know, they ask the temple president, where do you really keep all your money? And the fact is that in many cases, maybe it's not the way things are managed now, but when Prabhupada was managing things, the cash flow was fast. There wasn't that much money in the bank. As soon as money was gotten, it was spent. You know? So money didn't accumulate. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati also, as soon as money was collected, he would grab it and spend it from his disciples. He wouldn't let them accumulate. And Prabhupada was like that too. You know, ISKCON, at least during Prabhupada's times, ISKCON bank balances were low. You know, not CD deposits and everything else. You know, fixed deposits. Nothing was fixed. It was being spent as fast as it was collected, or faster. So that principle is there. And it wasn't the way Prabhupada managed ISKCON. Now, don't sit on money. Spend it for Krishna. Then Kali can't settle in. That doesn't mean that we should never save up money for a purpose. That's different here.
You said how Karma Yogi is supposed to dedicate his work to Krishna.
That's Krishna's idea of Karma Yoga. You know, maybe somebody else may have a different idea, but Krishna's idea is that he's working for Krishna. Yes.
But then suppose he dedicates that, he dedicates his work, the results of his work to Krishna.
Yes.
How do you differentiate between that and Krishna consciousness? He's dedicating it.
Krishna, pure, it's a kind of Krishna consciousness, but very impure.
Why is it impure?
Because he's not, because his work, the work itself is not for Krishna's pleasure. Only at the end he offers the fruits. What he's doing is not anything that Krishna is particularly interested in. You know, he's got a grocery store or something. It doesn't really please Krishna that he's selling, you know, detergent and other things, and some of them unofferable to people. He's doing some mundane business. The mundane business doesn't interest Krishna. But he's giving, results of his work to Krishna. And even that, only a percentage to Krishna. So that's karma yoga. There's some devotion there, but a small percentage only. But pure devotion, the activity is directly for Krishna's pleasure. Pure devotional service means 9 activities. Shravanam, Girtanam, Smaranam, and so on. Those 9 activities, that's pure devotional service. A person who's living just to do those 9 things and is minimizing everything else, like sleeping and eating, he's doing pure devotional service.
But he asked Arjuna to fight supporting.
Because that's the service, the personal devotional service that Krishna wants Arjuna to do for him. To do devotional service means to do what Krishna wants. So you can count that as pada sevanam if you want.
It's
do whatever I want. No, it's shuddha bhakti. Just take shelter of me and do what I want you to do. That is pure devotional service to Krishna. No other considerations. No other conditions. That's real devotion. Not, I've got my agenda and then I'll make an offering to Krishna at the end. Totally different thing. Not totally different. There's some similarity. There's some tinge of devotion in that karma yoga. Tinge. Small fraction. That's just the beginning of spiritual life.
But the devotees, now movement, I mean, we work, those of us who are outside, we work, and how do you consider that? We were initiated as people.
If a devotee is actually initiated, which means he's been trained up in the principles of Krishna consciousness and he knows what he's doing. Not just he's gone through a formality of initiation, but he's actually been trained. And he understands the purpose of his life is to serve Krishna. Not 1,000 years from now, but now. You know, that I've taken initiation, now I'm a full-time servant of Krishna. I may have my job that may take 18 hours a day, 6 days a week, or something. I may have a lot of my time eaten up by obligations that don't seem to be Krishna consciousness. But you make them Krishna conscious. You make it the intention of your heart to give everything to Krishna, then all these obstacles Krishna will deal with. The fact that you have no time to fulfill your ambition to just serve Krishna, that is a material obstacle that Krishna can easily remove. Don't worry about that. But have the intention that I mean to give everything, all my time, all my energy, to the glorification of Krishna. Have that intention and Krishna will work out the details of any obstacles in the way. But if you're thinking just about your material ambitions and your Krishna consciousness is just some icing on the top of the cake, it's just your religion, the thing you do once a week, or a few minutes a day, mumble a couple of rounds and wave a stick of incense, and that's all. You don't give a thought to it most of the time. Then you've only got a tinge of devotion. What matters is the attitude. In either case, you may be working 18 hours a day at a job, but it's the attitude that makes it pure devotion, or just a tinge of devotion. The intention. The physical conditions of your life, Krishna can change that in 1 minute, whenever he chooses to change it. There is no material obstacle to pure devotional service. You know, there's no employer in the world, no family that can keep you, can prevent you from being Krishna's devotee. If you really want to do it, there's no material obstacle.
But that would mean that eventually all people
if they want to, but a lot of people are lazy about that. They actually aren't ready to give it up. They're not ready to leave this world. They want to enjoy it. They're attached. Many are attached to their material position, and therefore they'll take a little bit of Krishna consciousness, but they won't let go of their material life. So for them, it's gonna take a long time. Eventually, they should learn to give up. But for now, they're holding on. It's those who don't want to hold on that Krishna will save the quickest, of course. The ones that are ready to let go, Krishna will help them let go. It's all a matter of attitude. If you're ready to surrender, Krishna will help you, no problem. He'll give you 1,000 ways every day to surrender. If you want to. If you don't want to, then Krishna can beat you over the head. He can have Maya beat you over the head constantly and you won't learn anything. But if you're ready to learn, Krishna will teach you very quickly. The same Maya will give you a couple of taps on the head and you'll get the idea, if you're smart. But if you're foolish, then you've got to be beaten constantly and you still don't learn. we got to take seriously what Krishna is saying here. Even in this third chapter, he's saying, Mayi, sarvani karmani sannyasya. Dedicate all your work to me. All of your work. Not just something, but everything. Do that. That's pretty good. Then you're pretty Krishna conscious if you can do that. And that's, this is just the third chapter that he's saying that. Okay.
Isn't there I don't remember the exact sentence, but Prabhupada writes in the 18th chapter that devotees in the Krishna consciousness movement who are married, but at the same time they are, I don't know the exact sentence, they're as good as the sannyasis.
Yes.
So how do they understand that?
Because the consciousness is good. They're doing responsible work, but they're doing it just for Krishna's pleasure. It doesn't matter that the work looks like material from the outside. It's transcendental because of the consciousness. Whatever they're doing, doing business, doing management, raising a family, they're doing it in pure Krishna consciousness, then they're as good as any sannyasi, yes.
Just now you said that ultimately you give up, so you say business.
Be ready to give up. You know? When Krishna tells you to give it up, you're ready in 1 minute. Like the Pandavas. The attitude of renunciation, not the external act. The attitude that whatever I'm doing it just for Krishna. And when Krishna decides that he doesn't want me to do it anymore, I'll give it up in 1 minute. Like the Pandavas. They fought and they shed blood and struggled for years to get that kingdom. But when Krishna indicated it's the time is up, that it's time to leave this world, Yudhishthira was ready to take off his royal garb in 1 minute. He fought so hard to get the kingdom, and as soon as Krishna gave the signal, he was ready to renounce it in 1 minute. Accept anything if Krishna wants it, and be ready to reject it in 1 minute if Krishna doesn't want it anymore. That's the attitude of surrender. Krishna decides when to take it and when to give it up. You let Krishna decide, then you're a pure devotee. Okay?
Yes, ma'am. This particular sloka says Yadya Dharthis Krishna. So generally people just follow the leader.
Generally, yes. Most people aren't self-reliant. They have to have an example to follow.
You think that's good? Just by following without utilizing their intelligence?
A self-reliant person is much, much more valuable. A self-reliant person can be a leader, but such a person is rare. The practical reality is most people are followers. Brahmana should be self-reliant. A kshatriya should be self-reliant. A vaishya is more or less self-reliant, although he's dependent in many ways. And a shudra is not self-reliant. But 95% of the population usually are shudras, or 85%, depends on the mix. Most of the population are followers, not leaders. Not that it should be like that, but that's the way it is. Better if people could think for themselves, but most people can't.
So if they follow the leader who is self-reliant...
If they follow a good leader, yes.
And then they also are eligible for liberation.
Anye tvaiva majananta shrutvanye bhupasate. There are people who can't figure it out for themselves. But if they hear from people who do know, do have spiritual knowledge, real spiritual knowledge, and they listen faithfully, they can also worship Krishna properly. Even without knowledge of their own. They simply hear from those who have it. We want to train up people to think for themselves, because ISKCON is there especially to train up a class of brahmanas to lead society. But you know, we want to set up a complete society. We will also try to take care of everybody else. But our first business is to train up brahmanas. Especially the ashrams, which should be centers for training up brahmanas. Okay, that's the main purpose of our ISKCON ashrams. One of the main purposes. Functioning Vaishnava Brahmins who can teach and guide society. That's what ISKCON, you know, sort of the internal purpose of ISKCON. Then when you have such brahmanas, they can serve the whole, enlighten the whole society. First you have to have the teachers, then they can teach. First, train up the teachers, then you can have education for everybody. The teachers, the brahmanas, should be self-reliant, should be able to think for themselves. That they'll be able to impart that knowledge to many people who can't think for themselves. And they'll set an example by their behavior. So especially the Brahmins and the Kshatriyas have to do that. They have to teach by example and by precept.
So anybody who follows such leaders, say they don't think for themselves. They simply follow just mechanically, they are doing things. We see many people, though they are externally wearing all Vaishnavas, dresses, doing chanting, everything,
yes.
But they are not, they are following all the rituals, but not the spirit as such.
Or they're ignorant. They haven't learned the philosophical basis of what the reasons why they're doing what they're doing. They're just doing it, but they don't understand why. And therefore, someone could, you know, if they stray outside the association of devotees, they could easily lose their faith by someone questioning, why are you doing what you're doing? Why don't you do this instead? And they won't be able to defend themselves. So they can be easily dragged away from devotional service because they have weak knowledge. And therefore their faith can't be strong. So it's not so good. It's not really the aim of ISKCON to create an ignorant congregation. There's some religions that do that. There's what are they called? The Druze? There's a small religion in Lebanon. It's a secret religion. Unless you're initiated, and initiation is only for a few, they don't teach you the philosophy. Most of the followers of religion are not allowed to know what their philosophy is. They're supposed to be in ignorance. Ignorant followers. We don't want ignorant followers. Of course, if someone ignorant wants to follow us, okay, better than being in ignorance and also not doing the right thing. If you want to chant Hare Krishna in ignorance, we can help you. But we'd rather train people up to understand what they're doing, if they're capable of it. As Kali Yuga progresses, people will become less and less capable. But try to catch them now before it's too late. You're worried that students aren't as smart as they were 30 years ago. Wait for another 30 years and see how stupid they get. You know? And 100 years from now, and 1,000 years from now, 300,000 years from now. Catch them before it's too late. People are getting less and less intelligent.
Yes. But externally, they appear to be getting more smarter with time, in the sense that the kids,
really?
Mundane sense. I don't know how to put it. Like, say,
smart about what? Smart about becoming like animals? Smart about, you know, disobeying their parents and acting like two-legged animals? Maybe I don't catch it. Maybe I'm not aware of what's going on.
What I'm saying is, I'm still trying to education this thing. What I've observed is that the time students are getting more, they work hard for their exams, they score more, I don't know, or they're more, at least some of the students.
Really?
Yeah.
More than previous generations?
At least they're forced to work hard because it's more competitive now. And they're really...
Okay. But... it's not real intelligence. You know, okay, they're straining their brains to, you know, for a career. But that's not real intelligence. You know, that's learning how to become a scared rabbit. You know. It's not learning how to be a wise man. Okay, they're using their brains, but for what purpose? You know, to become slaves. Not Brahmins. They're becoming like shudras. They're becoming slaves of the economic system. You know? Why are they so timid then? If they're actually becoming self-reliant and learning how to think, but why are they like scared rabbits? Because they're being oppressed. They're being driven into slavery. To make some money, just to make money. You know, you got to learn all this stuff, and you got to do good on your test, so you can get a job and make money. That's all it is, isn't it? How many of them are in it? for the pure love of knowledge. Would you go through such contortions just out of love of knowledge? I don't think so. So it's Mayaya Parita Jnana. They got brains, but they're using it for hellish purposes. Not that they don't have brains. I think their grandfathers also had just as much brains, but they used them in a sattvic way. You know, it's just more. It's more feverish. I don't think it's better. Just more feverish. I think their grandparents were smarter than they were. Okay. Maybe I'm not aware of what's actually going on. I'm not associating with these young people. I just see them. You know, they scare me.
He also in the education
of rest. Actually, most of the parents are treating their children as lottery tickets. You know,
yes.
Because if their child does very well, they have a chance to make more money, so they are better off.
It's a bet. It's a gambling. It's an investment. It's a speculative investment.
Very true. Actually, it's happening.
And it's so oppressive. What the families do to the children, and what the whole system does to them. And probably the ones that are worst treated among the well-to-do are the teachers, because you're a rich kid, you pay a lot of money to go to school, and you've got more money than your teachers do. You come to school in a car, and this teacher only has a scooter. Yeah. And you don't have to have any respect for him because you're paying him a lot of money to teach you. Right? So, you know, it's an oppressive system, but probably the most oppressed are the teachers.
Okay. I just want to make a note of this regarding these leaders and followers of the leaders.
Yes. So
actually, don't you think the problem is that everybody wants to be a leader and nobody wants to be a follower. Everybody wants to be a leader, actually.
Yes.
There are very few followers now, and most of them want to be leaders.
Yes.
But actually, a pure Vaishnava devotee should realize that, even though he's made a leader, he should behave as a servant of the servant of the servant and not the master of the master of the master.
Right. Exactly.
And that's exactly the problem that's prevailing in most cases.
Okay, but it's just a reflection of the general society. Yeah. We bring our conditioning with us. But we should see it for what it is and give it up.
Yeah.
It's just materialistic to try to be a dominator. Of course, we do have to, some devotee is given a position of leadership, he has to be a strong leader. But he has to do it in the proper consciousness. Consciousness of detachment. And surrender. That, yes, I am a servant. Anyway, that's the basic principle of Krishna consciousness, is to learn how to be a servant of Krishna.
That's what the acharyas tell you. I mean, when you're initiated,
yes.
I'm talking those people who are initiated,
yes.
They must be told by the acharyas or their spiritual masters to be the servant of the servant of the servant, right?
And if they read Prabhupada's books, they're going to be told that constantly, yes.
And not to be the leader of this.
Yes. Yes, that's a right, the correct point, yes. Thank you. Okay, thank you. All glory to Srila Prabhupada. Srimad Bhagavad Gita Ki Jai.